Hi, my name is Daniel Garber, and I review movies each Friday morning for CulturalMining.com and Take 5 CIUT 89.5 FM. Today I'm going to review some movies and talk about how guilt and shame tie in with making movies and watching them. Last week I was calling that cheesy Sword and Sandals movie, Clash of the Titans, a guilty pleasure, meaning something I enjoyed even though I realized it was a bad movie. A woman I know told me she has a weakness for what she calls chick lit, and the equivalent type of movies, chick flicks and rom-coms, romantic comedies. They were her guilty pleasures. She devours those books by the dozen and automatically goes to any movie with even a hint of the old TV show Sex in the City. A guilty pleasure. But then I thought about it. Where's the guilt? Where's the sin? What's morally wrong with going to a bad movie and enjoying it anyway? Nothing. And I was at an after party with a filmmaker a couple weeks ago and made a comment about the crowds of the movie Hot Tub Time Machine. His response? You saw Hot Tub Time Machine? For shame. Is it shameful to go to bad movies? I'd say no to that, too. Once they dim the lights at a theater, you're a passive viewer. No shame there. You didn't make the movie. But this sort of crystallizes in my mind the subtle difference between guilt and shame. The anthropologist Ruth Benedict declared after World War II that the U.S. was a guilt culture, whereas Japan, which was under U.S. occupation at the time, was a shame culture. In other words, she said, in a Western culture, you feel terrible deep down inside when you do something wrong. But in an Eastern culture, you feel your reputation among others is what is damaged when you do something unacceptable. So she says there's guilt versus shame. Well, anyway, to get back to movies, maybe we all set the bar too low in terms of what we can derive enjoyment from. But as long as you can both tell the difference between a good movie and a bad one, and then accept your own tastes in movies, whether they're good or bad, you're fine. No shame. No guilt, just pleasure. Not guilty pleasure. Hot Tub Time Machine is what it says it is, a comedy with a paper-thin plot. A bunch of middle-aged losers pining for their glory days, days of getting drunk, getting stoned, and trying to get laid at a ski lodge, decide to revisit it. But once they get there, they see the place has gone to seed, just like their lives. But somehow a hot tub sends them back to the future, to relive the worst of the 80s. Then they do jokey comedy things as they try to go home again. That's the movie. The visual punchlines were mainly based on the various liquids that are expelled from men's bodies. You get the picture. I think they were all covered, except maybe pus. Was there a pus punchline? I think they're saving that for the sequel. The thing is, it was sort of funny in an intentionally campy way. I saw it with zero expectations, so I ended up laughing or groaning a lot. The comedian actors, especially Rob Corddry in his horribleness, were good at what they were doing, and there were a few good cameos too, notably Crispin Glover as a one-armed bellboy. So don't be ashamed to see this movie, but don't feel guilty if you miss it. Greenberg, a new movie by Noah Baumbach, who directed the really great movie The Squid and the Whale a few years ago, is a human drama about a guy going through an internal crisis and the aimless woman he gets involved with, boy meets girl. This is a romantic comedy, sort of. That's made how romantic comedy should be made, if I had my druthers. Roger Greenberg, played by Ben Stiller, crashes like a green iceberg onto his brother's house in L.A. He's a feckless, benighted, compulsive, neurotic carpenter who's there to do nothing in particular and doesn't mind saying so. He wants to be alone and resents the world for invading his house-sitting solitude. He's totally shameless, saying whatever pops into his mind, but also racked with guilt for his past misdeeds. He has no possessions, no house, no car to worry about, just his tool belt. He's building a wooden doghouse for Mahler, his brother's family dog, as he learns to cope outside a mental institution. Greenberg got along okay in Manhattan, hopping cabs or taking the subway, but he suddenly finds himself back in L.A., dependent on his former best friend, played by Reese Ifans, whose rock career he'd sabotaged, and his brother's personal assistant, Florence, to ferry him around. He's horrified and baffled by the whole city. Then he begins to have a sort of a relationship with the younger Florence, played by Greta Gerwig, who is driven and hardworking but adrift, and coming to terms with the consequences of a previous relationship. Can they love each other? Can they even stand each other? They're hurt people who are afraid they'll hurt other people. All the characters in Greenberg, even the bit parts, are interesting and three-dimensional, not 3D, though not necessarily likable. The whole movie looks like the late 70s or early 80s. The colors, the design, the costumes, the font of the titles, the way the camera moves or zooms in, most of the music on the soundtrack, everything. It's stunning to watch. Don't go to this expecting a wacky, overacted Ben Stiller comedy. Go for a moving, gentle, though mildly disturbing, comic drama. This is a really good movie. Another good movie, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, is opening today. This is a great Swedish mystery thriller about Blomqvist, a disgraced journalist, and Lisbeth, a young, mysterious hacker, and their interactions with the Vanger Group, a very shady family of billionaires. Blomqvist loses his job at a left-wing magazine and faces a prison term after writing an expose on a corrupt billionaire. His source proved to have been a setup, so he's forced to take a well-paying job as a sort of a researcher detective for a different billionaire who's trying to find out what happened to his niece, Harriet, who was kidnapped or killed, the body was never found, decades before. The Vanger family is sleazy to the nth degree. They live out in the woods in sinister Nordic hunting lodges equipped with a skeleton in every closet. Tons of shame and guilt here. But Blomqvist is gradually unveiling the hidden past with the help of an anonymous helper on the internet. This helper, Lisbeth, is a fantastic character, a cross between Steve McQueen and Tank Girl. She's tough, she's rough, she's stone cold. She's a punk, she's a loner, she's an ex-con, she's a computer genius. She's also the girl in the title with the dragon tattoo. She's initially hired by the Vangers to spy on and write a report on Blomqvist to make sure he can be trusted. They eventually meet up and form a sort of an alliance to try to find out what happened to the missing girl and solve the ever-thickening mystery. This is just the kind of mystery thriller I like, where you're solving alongside the characters, but with enough hidden that you can't really predict what's going to happen next. It's visually fantastic, with clues and images like old photos and newspaper clippings driving the story. So much so, you wonder how it worked on paper. It also has lots of amazing Swedish scenery and landscapes. Makes you want to jump on a plane to Stockholm if it weren't for all the thugs, murderers, rapists, stalkers, and Nazis hiding in the pine trees. A few potential drawbacks. This movie has a few extremely violent extended scenes. They're not exploitative scenes. The movie doesn't glorify it or make it titillating, so you feel for the victims, not the violence, but it's still a bit hard to watch. It's also tied to the famous mystery novels by Stieg Larsson, so it spends a long time tying up all the loose ends at the end of the story. But I think it's a great movie, and I can't wait for the next one. I think I'm going to read book two in the meantime. Just to recap, I talked about Greenberg and Hot Tub Time Machine, now playing Check Your Listings, and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, in Swedish with English subtitles, opening today. This is Daniel Garber reviewing movies every Friday on Take 5, CIUT 89.5 FM, and look for the podcast on my website, culturalmining.com.